Welcome to the brightest audience in the nation to the Bob Benyart Live Telethon. During our telethon, we're offering a free gift, Bob's video series, Having a Great Prayer Life, when you become a new subscriber to any of our monthly subscriptions. Our newest product, our monthly sermon audios on standard compact disc, allows you to listen to the sermon on any CD player, including the one in your car. You can also get the monthly sermons on MP3 CD, or you can get the video version of the monthly sermon videos on DVD. Bob's monthly Bible studies are now available on DVD or MP3 CD. These are great for starting your own family Bible study or a neighborhood Bible study. And Bob's monthly topical videos give you a new topical video each month. And with the best of Bob, you can get the best 8 Bob Benyart Live shows every month. By becoming a new subscriber to any of Bob's monthly products, making a new monthly donation of $20 or more, or a one-time donation of $50, you'll receive the video series, Having a Great Prayer Life, free of charge, special for the Bob Benyart Live Telethon.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Benyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, we have a lot to cover. The Russians have drilled into an ancient lake in Antarctica.
Yeah, 12,366 feet worth.
2 miles deep, and they say that that water has been sealed in by ice for about 20 million years. We'll talk about that. And another update on butterflies. We have the most wonderful time on this show talking about butterflies.
That's right. And the butterfly effect all over the world of our talks on the butterflies.
That's right. Yeah, so we'll get to that. Also, at space.com, there is an article looking at data from NASA, and they're wondering if a black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy is eating asteroids.
Asteroids.
Whether or not every day it's eating an asteroid or so. So we could talk about that, and that ties in nicely with Answers in Genesis. They have an article about what triggered the global flood, and they wonder if it was meteors. And I sort of have the same disagreement with both of these articles, the one from space.com and the one from Answers in Genesis. But we could get to that. And then finally, where did all the water go from the global flood?
All right. Where did all the water go? I've heard that question before.
So those are our topics. All right. So, Fred, for starters, the Russians have spent a decade drilling through more than 2 miles of solid ice. So what are they looking for?
Water.
They are, but it's in the Antarctic. So it's very unusual, of course, to just come across liquid water. Well, it's too cold, so they got to drill down 2 miles. And, it takes a long time, millions of years, for that ice to build up down there.
Oh, I thought you meant millions of years for them to drill down there, too.
Well, that took a decade. So, Fred, supposedly we hear that it took millions of years for ice to build up as thick as it is.
That's right. In fact, Bob, this reminds me, I was giving a presentation in Boulder, and I was talking about the age of the Earth. And I wasn't preaching to the choir at this. It was actually a church in Boulder. I'd say about half of them were old earthers.
Yeah.
And one guy.
Did you bring a flak jacket?
I should have.
Camouflage for after the meeting? Yeah. You could hide in the parking lot?
Yeah.
But you survived it. You're here.
I did. I survived it.
Up in Boulder.
And there's a couple of guys in the crowd that were professed scientists. They have PhDs. Yeah. And one of them said that.
Alleged scientists.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of them said that ice cores, you take ice core samples, proves that the Earth is billions of years old. So I asked him about this airplane, this World War II airplane that they found buried under the ice near Greenland.
Yeah.
There was a squadron that they had to do a crash landing in Greenland, land belly up, slid down the ice, and miraculously they all survived. But many years later, they found those planes
many
buried
years
under
later,
how many feet of ice?
Almost, it was over 200 feet of ice in like a half a century or so.
Yeah, and I think there was a certain amount of age they put on each layer of ice. And if they hadn't known about this, that would have probably dated to millions of years that those planes were buried millions of years under the ice. They must be from an ancient civilization, Battlestar Galactica or something.
Right.
Who knows?
So, in other words, there are examples like manganese nodules. Manganese in the ocean, there are millions of these blobs of manganese. They're like little rocks. They're hard. And we're told that they're some of the slowest forming features on the crust of the earth, and that literally a single one that's smaller than, say, a baseball could take a million years or more to form. And one marine geologist, Dr. John Yates, is in a documentary published by the World Almanac. We have this on our list of not-so-old things. And he said, actually, we have found manganese nodules growing on beer cans.
Beer cans. So these same fighter pilots, these 18-million-year-old fighter pilots were drinking 18-million-year-old beer.
Yes, that's right.
So, this guy, the scientist, said that, well, that was an area where there was a more rapid rate that the ice formed, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I said, so you're agreeing there's assumption built in of how rapid the ice layers form.
Right?
So his whole belief in this millions of years is based on assumptions.
Right, of course. And he should be able to acknowledge that. Now, what's going to be interesting, Fred, they got through to the liquid water. This is beneath the Vostok Research Station, and they called the lake Vostok Lake after their research station. This is the Russians doing this. And they've allowed the borehole to freeze over 100 feet thick of ice, and now it's sort of sealing in the lake more, and they're going to wait some months, and then they're going to go back and start to explore this lake, this freshwater lake. And what do you think they're going to find? I think we can make a prediction.
Okay.
My prediction would be about the reaction. Whatever they do find, they're going to say, who would have thought that this could have stayed like this for 20 million years?
They're going to be surprised about something. I mean, that's
going to happen often. They're going to be, this is my prediction here on Real Science Friday. They say that it's been sealed off for up to 34 million years, this lake. And they're going to find things that are going to challenge that. And they're going to say, well, how could this have been this way without access to light, without access to the atmosphere? How could it have been like this for 20 million years? That's my prediction.
Yeah.
Because that has happened 10,000 times over, that things that they think are millions of years old, lo and behold, you break open a dinosaur bone and there's blood vessels and protein.
And so, I think that'll happen, and then they'll downplay it. He compared this to the first time we went into space. That's what he compares this discovery to. So I wonder if he won't be so excited after. They'll be real curious. I like this prediction. We'll see what happens, what they find.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be great. Also, what they do find most likely will be evidently supportive of the biblical history that the earth has gone through.
Yeah, it's going to be something contradictory to this happening over millions and millions of years.
Yes. Okay, now butterflies. There's a great article in Answers Magazine put out by Ken Ham's ministry, Answers in Genesis, and it's Butterflies on the Battlefield. We've talked a lot about butterflies. What's this latest development?
Well, this latest one is butterfly wings. They display colors. By the way, they reflect light. It's different angles. If you look at a monarch butterfly, it's really cool. At one angle, you see a certain color. And another angle, you turn the butterfly some certain angle, another direction, you see a different color.
Yeah, like a fluorescence. And if a butterfly dies, or you kill it, and you rub it in your fingers, and you don't get the color on your finger because there's no pigment in the wing, something else creates the color.
Yeah. So it's like light interference hits these wings. They're like Christmas tree canyons. They look like a bunch of Christmas trees stacked on each other, but
tiny,
like a canyon.
Like microscopic.
Yeah, and so the light goes in there. There's interference effect, and so that's why we see this iridescent color of kind of a purple.
Wow.
Turns to kind of more of a silverish purple as you look at a different angle.
Wow.
So what the scientists have thought about is a slight change, as we've talked about, in the angle of the scales changes the color. So a soldier out on the battlefield, if he wore a badge that had a similar mechanism and an explosion went off, it would change the color of the badge. And based on how strong the explosion was, you could read it on the badge so that they can determine.
Just based on the color of the badge.
Yeah.
So, all right, let me see if I can figure this out. We have problems with IEDs, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's improvised explosive devices.
That's right. In fact, an IED explosives ordnance guy is a friend of the show. He's from the Midwest, Southern Midwest. And, Fred, these are real problems. Thousands of our troops in the Middle East, especially Iraq and Afghanistan, and thousands of our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere have been injured to one extent or another by these IEDs. It's a big problem.
Yeah, a friend of mine who's a retired Denver police officer and a big supporter of the Personhood Amendment, he went over there to train Iraqi troops, and he got hurt by one of those IEDs.
So sorry. So engineers have figured out, using the technology in butterfly wings, that they're trying to make a badge that a soldier would wear. So if he's near an explosion, the badge will change color based on the force. So the medic could determine virtually instantly, as soon as he sees the soldier, how severe a blast that he was in.
Yeah. So again, we're looking at the technology of the butterfly from the ultimate engineer. Huh. And it's going to aid physicians in, you know, determining the extent of injuries for these soldiers.
Could we talk about a couple other things we've discussed in the past regarding butterflies? They're just such wonderful creatures to talk about for the creation evolution debate.
Yeah, don't they come from like mummies?
They come from, well, a chrysalis, a cocoon-like structure, which is so amazing because this caterpillar crawls up to the underside of a leaf, attaches.
And it's Egyptian, right?
It's Egyptian. Yeah, no. It's not quite a mummy, but it's worse than a mummy, Fred. It spins this cocoon, this chrysalis around itself, and then it begins to digest itself.
Oh, no way.
It releases enzymes. Imagine a creature liquefying itself, digesting itself.
Okay, so
that's what the caterpillar
does. So it's kind of randomly losing all this information and deteriorating. Well, that sounds like evolution could do that.
Right. It liquefies itself, and then it begins to reassemble a completely different kind of creature.
Oh, no way.
One that flies with wings, a beautiful butterfly, like a monarch, for example.
But wait a minute. The secular scientists say that everything happens, that it's a random mistake in the DNA coupled with natural selection.
Right.
So how could that happen?
Yeah, how could mutations and other forms of modifications to your genome, to the DNA, how could they bring an organism like a caterpillar to decide to seal itself off from the rest of the world and consume itself and digest itself, liquefy itself, and then it has to be able to survive that process and come out as a totally different kind of creature that flies?
And reassemble all that information. Wow.
I mean, God is just so awesome to be able to put the code, the instructions for that whole metamorphosis process, to put that in the DNA of every cell in the butterfly.
Yeah, then the butterflies, they teach their little ones how to travel. And they teach them where to go. They give them a map.
Well, they join AAA.
AAA, that's right, yeah.
AAA, so they get a map so that they can find out where they have to don't they migrate long distances?
So, yeah, they travel long distances, and they aren't told where to go by their parents. They somehow know where to go, and it's over thousands of miles.
Yeah, that's right. From, for example, New England. You know, whether it's Maine or probably as far as Nova Scotia, they go across the U.S., down through Texas, through Mexico to central Mexico. These little butterflies, Fred, they know how to navigate on the globe. And they go to the same neighborhood in this one forest where they were born.
Yeah, where they can pay their AAA dues.
That's right. So then they have to head back. For all that to be in, I mean, the brain of a butterfly has got to be like a pinhead. And for that ability to be there displays the glory of God in an insect.
I wonder if they'll be on O'Reilly Factor's Patriots and Pinheads. So do they fly in a V formation?
I don't think so.
But hey, it reminds me of the golden plover, right? They fly in a V formation to be able to migrate from Alaska to Hawaii. If they didn't fly in that V formation, they'd plunk into the ocean.
That's right. Imagine birds that really, they're not massive. It's not like a refueling plane for the Air Force. It's a little bird, and a bird flies for thousands of miles from Alaska to Hawaii. Over the ocean. How many landmarks are in the ocean?
Yeah, and there's no land between where they fly from Alaska to Hawaii, so they have nowhere to land.
And they couldn't possibly make it with the energy they have stored up in their body.
Yeah, scientists have determined this, the secular scientists, and they discovered how they can make it to Hawaii is they fly in a V formation.
Right, and that conserves their energy because of aerodynamics.
Yeah, and the weaker birds tend to fly in the back of the V because, you know, that's where you get the most advantage.
Yeah.
And the stronger birds tend to go to the front.
And they take turns.
Yeah.
They rotate.
They rotate in and out.
So, Fred, how does that evolve? Like we talk about the butterfly. How does the butterfly evolve? How does the species get through bit by bit, small steps, okay,
yeah.
Guys, we're going to start liquefying ourselves. We're going to try this. We're going to see how it turns out. And, well, look at Joe over there. Joe tried it last week, and he doesn't look very good.
You know, with evolution being mistakes in the DNA and mutation, you know, like you're mutating into something gooey.
Yeah.
I can see that end of it, right? Okay.
Yeah,
so
I could see it going wrong.
Just go into
turn into a puddle.
Yeah,
right.
You put something into a microwave, you know, it's going to be gooey at the end.
So these birds, Fred, how could the birds at the beginning – how could the first birds leave Alaska and get to Hawaii, do it successfully, come back and start the family tradition? I mean, it is not reasonable that Darwinian mechanisms can do these things. Like if a leg evolves into a wing, as they say happen repeatedly,
mm-hmm.
like with insects and bats and dinosaurs. Well, if a leg evolves into a wing, through gradual changes over millions of years, wouldn't you have a very bad leg long before you have a good wing?
One would think.
You'd think.
You know?
Trying to run away from a predator and your half leg, half wing is causing you problems.
Well, they say that the first thing off the ark was the unicorn, and the second thing off the ark was the tiger.
And so much for the unicorn. So butterflies on the battlefield, very encouraging article by Answers in Genesis. And I'm glad that we could give them kudos because they've got a tremendous creation museum and they're heroes for the gospel. But in a moment, I'm going to disagree with another article that they have. But first, Fred, this here is from space.com. It's an interesting article on the black hole that is near the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And there's good evidence that there are black holes,
mm-hmm.
including that there are black holes at the center of galaxies. This is a really fun area of science and discovery.
Yeah, and they're saying that this thing is munching on asteroids.
That's the part that I'd like to take issue with.
Okay.
Certainly, there are space objects. God has filled the universe with billions, trillions, quadrillions, quintillions. What comes after quintillions?
Gazillion.
Gazillions. Googlezillions.
Yeah.
Sextillions, septillions, octillions, nontillions, decillions of objects in space. We know that. But asteroids and comets and meteoroids, these things, I assert, after studying Walt Brown's book in the beginning and learning about what caused the global flood, I assert that these things in our solar system came from the Earth, that asteroids, meteors, comets came from the Earth.
And we read something recently, didn't we, that lends evidence to that?
Well, yeah, about amino acids.
Yeah, so
great point.
Yeah, so they've got the left-handed life, you know, bacteria.
Right.
All the amino acids are going to be at a left-handed configuration.
In life, in plants and animals, amino acids, which you could find in the inanimate world, you don't need life, like biological life, to have amino acids. In fact, biological life is built up from amino acids. So in the inanimate realm, amino acids are like hockey sticks. They come either left-handed shape or right-handed, and they're 50-50. Well, life uses only the left-handed amino acids.
Yeah, they're always configured left-handed in life.
Right. And so if you have a DNA molecule or a protein, the protein is built with amino acids. They're all left-handed. If you had a right-handed one in there in the middle, say of a 200 amino acid protein that's folded, it would break the protein. It would not work.
Yeah, it'd be rejected. It'd be cell death.
Right. And so life uses left-handed. And as soon as an organism dies, its amino acids begin to deteriorate to return to a 50-50 ratio. It's called being racemized.
Yeah.
The racemization.
And it's exactly what we saw in the Stanley Miller experiment, right? Where they synthesized amino acids and claimed that they created life.
Right. That's exactly right. And what did they get? They did synthesize acids. That's pretty cool. You know, you start with a bunch of atoms and you put it in the test tube, heat it up, and you get some acid. Congratulations. But the acids they got, the amino acids, were right and left-handed. And so to explain the origin of life, you have to get beyond that hurdle.
That's right.
Well, it turns out that when they find amino acids in strata on the Earth that are millions or even a billion years old, they find left-handed amino acids.
So and they haven't racemized.
Right. Yeah. It's not the chiral T is still indicating left-handedness. And now meteorites from space, they're finding out that apparently, in a significant percentage of them, they're finding amino acids that are left-handed. And I think that Dr. Walt Brown is right. And this is yet again more tremendous evidence that these meteorites have come from Earth.
Yeah, but if you put on your secular worldview and put on those lenses, I look at this, I'm like, Bob, well, wait a minute. Didn't life come from outer space and it was all left-handed and it seeded the planet?
That's what they say,
that's
Fred.
What they said. The article that we were talking about, that was their point of view. That's their perspective. But wait a minute.
That's right.
Why, you're not going to consider that maybe they came from Earth?
It's funny. When we find a speck of water in a meteorite that's out in space, they say, wow, it must have come from Mars. It's like Mars is like a desert. It's bone dry. There's no liquid water on Mars. The Earth is covered two-thirds with water. The Earth has a massive amount of water on it, and the Earth is brimming with life. It's the blue planet because of all the water and our atmosphere, all conducive to life. And so if we find a speck of water or we find a speck of, say, a microbe on a meteorite, don't think that the meteorite came from Mars where there's no life and no water. Think that it came from Earth, which is the source of these resources for our solar system.
Very common sense, Bob.
It is, but it's amazing, Fred, how the atheist scientists simply don't even consider it. They simply don't consider that if a meteorite lands on Earth with evidence of, say, microbes or water, that maybe it came from Earth. They simply can't consider
it. They can't consider it.
They can't get themselves to consider it.
And, you know, to jump ahead real quick, Bob, just looking at this picture of the globe, and if you look at the Pacific Ocean from the right vantage point, it looks like the Earth is completely covered in water. There's this one viewpoint from space. All you see is water. One side of the globe is all water.
Yeah, it is amazing. And this is from this article from the Institute for Creation Research. And they say that NASA has just released an image of the Earth January 25th, 2012, which helps to answer the question people ask about a global flood. They say, where did all the water go? Fred, the water is all over the Earth. Describe that image that you're looking at for the audience again.
Yeah, so, and we'll post this on the website, I think, after the show, right?
Right, yeah,
so,
we will.
So it's a picture, it's a view of the Earth from outer space. And it's a vantage point right in a certain part of the Pacific Ocean. And you can see land on the very outskirt of this circle. It's
hardly,
a blue circle.
Hardly, right?
You barely see, on the upper right quadrant and the lower left quadrant.
It looks like you're seeing nothing but a sphere of water.
Yeah. So we just showed our producer and he nodded in agreement.
Yeah. So you see, I think that's a little bit of Baja California up in the top right and maybe a little bit of Indonesia. There's hardly, you barely see land. It looks like almost 100%. Just ocean.
Yep. So where did all the water go from the flood?
Well, in the ocean basins, and I think, again, Dr. Walt Brown had it exactly right, that the crust of the earth cracked. That's what brought about the global flood. And when the crust cracked, water from 10 miles deep, a sphere of water, subterranean sea, basically, below the entire crust of the earth, broke forth, eroded out what today we call the Atlantic Ocean. There was tremendous shifting in the crust of the earth, and the continents actually, from that shifting, it didn't happen over millions of years with plate tectonics. That's not it. It happened rapidly. The mountain ranges were lifted up rapidly. The ocean basins sunk down, and so the water drained off the continents at the end of the flood into the ocean basins. Walt Brown lays it out beautifully in his book, In the Beginning, which we offer here at Bob Inyart Live. We sell his book. I highly recommend it. And it would help with our telethon. And Fred, you know, our telethon is doing well. We've taken in $20,600.
What's the goal?
$30,000.
Okay, so
we're
close.
We're getting close. And we have a $200 matching offer from Dave in Manhattan, one of our listeners in New York.
Great. Listens
while he's at work. Shouldn't do that, Dave. And he said he'd like to offer $200 and he'd like it matched. If somebody will give $200, he wants to double his gift, and that enables someone else to double their gift.
Oh, awesome.
And that would put us to $21,000. So if anyone out there can help, please do with our telethon and check out our science department online at kgov.com, kgov.com. Click on the store. I think you'll love it. Okay, so Fred, the water is in the ocean basins, and scientists have said, even NASA's flirted with, maybe Mars had a global flood. Mars doesn't have any liquid water. The Earth is covered in it, and yet they mock the thought when the Bible says the Earth had a global flood, even though we find seashells on the tops of mountain ranges all over the world.
That's right. So you know, if they flattened out the Earth, we'd be covered in ocean.
We'd be covered with water. That's absolutely true. So, Fred, there's just so much evidence for the biblical account of Earth's history. And so I don't think the black hole at the center of the Milky Way is eating asteroids, because there are no asteroids there. Asteroids are flying rock piles.
Flying rock piles.
They're piles of rock.
And they came from the Earth. So the theory is that the breaking up of the fountains of the Great Deep?
That's right. When the crust of the Earth broke and this water from 10 miles below escaped with enormous force, reaching escape velocity, and that's what populated the solar system with our asteroids, meteoroids, and comets. So meteors could not have triggered the flood because they were the result of the flood. And a comet is a dirty snowball.
Dirty snowball.
That's what a comet is.
And they don't know where comets came from. They claim they came from an Oort cloud that they made up.
Right.
They never observed an Oort cloud.
And there's so much evidence. We've now been studying comets. We've gone to comets. Comets have, like, olivine, the most common mineral on Earth. And they have the minerals that the atheists have said cannot form out far in the solar system.
Oh,
so anyway, there's so much great evidence. Hey, check it out. KGov.com. God bless you.
Children are a blessing from God, but when parents reject and ignore His wisdom and teaching about parenting, children can grow up to be a curse to their parents and to the world around them. What does the Bible say about parents and children, education, and child discipline? Pastor Bob Inyart covers this powerful and critical topic in his teaching series, Raising Godly Children. Order by calling 800-8-INYART or online at kgovstore.com. Marriage is the very foundation of human society, but it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Inyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-INYART or online at kgovstore.com.